Welcome to the Bravo Papers, a safe space for all us Bravo fans who love to analyze, deconstruct, and talk about our favorite Bravo shows ad nauseum. So join me, Bravo and Botox, and we'll catch up on all the Bravo news and read way too much into our favorite shows and Bravo celebrities. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Bravo Papers, Bravo Weekly News, here with your host, Emily / Bravo and Botox. I hope you are all having a fantastic day and that your Monday is, you know, as least painful as possible. Okay, I know that's tough because Mondays are Mondays, but you know, or who knows, maybe you don't work the traditional schedule. Maybe you're off on Mondays. Maybe you're at home and maybe you're, you know, on mat leave or a stay-at-home parent or something. And Mondays can just still be stressful. Getting the kids to school, you know, starting to run errands. It's one of those things. Oh, it's been a week. It's been a week of a lot of television. Like, I've said this before, but what is going on? There's just so much because I'm watching Love is Blind also. So like, kill me. It's so much. But I've caught up on Love is Blind. I don't know why I watch this goddamn show. It's on every year on Netflix and pretty much every year or so or whatever it is. And, you know, I go into it every season with the same thing of like, oh, God, here we go. And then I start watching it. I get sucked in and I really convince myself. I don't know why, or I guess they convince me that, you know, some of these couples could work out. You know, like they really convince me that I'm like, oh, these two, they have a chance. Like, oh, that couple has a chance. Like, I really start to believe in it and believe in, you know, love, I guess. And then it's always after the honeymoons, you know, they usually go to like Mexico or wherever, like some sort of, you know, beach vacation. And usually by the time that's done, I'm like, okay. You know, they go back to real life and you're like, oh, for God's sakes. And it just proves the same theory that, you know, we prove over and over again, which is that men are trash for the most part. And I mean, don't get me wrong, because there's this girl, Hannah, on it right now and she's a nightmare. So it's not just the men, but it's usually mostly the men. Okay. Hannah is like, She's 26, but she thinks she's got the life experience of a 46-year-old. And it's a very 26-year-old thing to like, you know, even if you don't watch the show, I'm just telling you about this. She thinks she's got everything figured out. And, you know, I think a lot of us were that way when we were 26. You know, we had like that moment of like, okay, I'm an adult here. I'm in the real world, like enough-ish. Even if I'm not like fully, I'm like close, or I've lived on my own for a little bit. I've got a job. You know, we really like believe that we're full adults. And she really believes like she's full adult, mature. She's got everything figured out, you know, and the guy that she's with, she's way more ahead of him and mature than him, which like she's really not, like he's not much better. Like I don't, like he's, you know, he still lives with his parents, so there's that. But you know, he's at least seems just like a nice person. Like he just seems like a nice guy at the very least. So it's so like the way she beats him down about how like she knows better about everything. He's not pulling his weight. He's not doing this. He's not doing that. Like it just comes off very, you know, like she wants the audience to be on her side. And it seems very transparent that she's trying to spin a narrative that unfortunately, because it, if it's true, it was certainly edited out because we don't see any of that from him. Like there is no besides him, like living at home, you know, there's really no, you know, like he has a job. He's a realtor. he, you know, yes, his mom and dad are paying his rent. He pays all his other stuff, his phone, his car, whatever. But the big ironic part is she has no job. So she has quit her job to be on Love is Blind. So this is what we're dealing with. Maybe I just convinced you to go watch it. Listen, the finale, like the weddings, is next week. So it's not too late. It's not too late to do a binge. Listen, at the end of the day, every season, am I entertained? Yes, I'm entertained. Did I enjoy myself? I enjoyed myself. Because at the end of the day, I watch Love is Blind for mess. I don't watch it for like the romance. Like I'm not logging, like, yes, I get sucked in, but I'm not logging onto Netflix thinking, you know, these couples are all going to make it. Like, I don't think that. Like, you know, and then even when I do get convinced, once the letdown comes, I'm always like, yeah, that's the you know, I know the letdown is coming. And I enjoy the mess, the ride of the mess. So there's that. Okay, now let's get into Bravo. Lots of housewives shows, Salt Lake City, New York, OC, and Potomac. It's crazy. And sometimes I forget about Potomac because it's on the weekend. And I don't know why in my head that's like separated. And then I'm like, oh yeah, the Potomac's on. And it's on tonight because it's Sunday morning and I'm recording this. You know, I have to say to everyone listening, whether you're a former Potomac watcher and you've kind of fell off, or you are a watcher currently, I'm going to say I'm really enjoying this season. It has my recommendation. I think if you stopped watching Potomac, don't blame you, because I know they've had a really couple, the last couple seasons have been rough, not great. But this season, we're only two in. Although I saw a preview for tonight that looks really good. But the first two episodes were really, really good. Like taking Robin and Candace out, I think was very much the right decision. And it has just created a new dynamic. There's fresh new people that are like, have like really good personal storylines. Like there's one newbie who's kind of reminding me of Bronwyn in the sense that like, she's got an interesting personal storyline in that her and her husband are divorced, but they're still living together, but they're seeing other people and their daughter doesn't know about it. And she's very like the new one is very like, she's very like news anchory. Like she has like a news anchor kind of voice. But she doesn't come off as fake. And I like her. And she's very like, I think she's bringing like some classiness to the game. So I like that. And, you know, you have like the mess that is Mia as usual. And Giselle's much more palatable without Robin. And I don't know, you heard it here first, but this might be Wendy's last season. But either way, like it's, you know, the dynamic is good. So I think it's going in a good direction. So I recommend that you get back on board and start watching because I'm really liking it. All right. So we do have news. It's not like the craziest news week, but we do have a big story. My God. Because if you did not hear, and I spent my entire Patreon episode last week talked about this for 45 minutes last week. For this news episode, I'm going to give you just the news updates. If you want like my unabridged unedited thoughts on this as a PR move, then yeah, you can go to patreon.com/bravoandbotox. But Tamra Judge has decided to tell the audience that she has discovered that she may be on the autism spectrum. This was from her first therapy appointment. So let me break it down in case you have been under a rock or you've been very busy and you haven't been on socials, which is possible. Tamra basically went on to her podcast, Two Teas in a Pod, and we all know she's been getting insane fan backlash this season. People are not happy with her and the choices that she's been making and the way she's been treating Shannon and, you know, and. But she goes on her podcast and says that she had one therapy session. Okay, so let's start with that. And this is the first time she's gone to therapy in like, I don't know if it was either in years or ever, but that she decided to go to therapy because this year's been really hard for her. Yeah. Well, that's your own fault, Tamra. Anyway, so then she went to therapy and was told that she is on the spectrum. Okay, I'm pausing for like dramatic effect here. This was a Hail Mary PR move. And, you know, people have been making jokes. You know, I did a Twitter roundup and all that kind of stuff. And like, people are like, wow, like what a insane PR Hail Mary move to pull out to try to say you have autism to excuse all your bad behavior and to get fan sympathy. But I just want to point out that she is not the trailblazer of this, okay? Rachel Levis was the first one. I'm just, not that I'm trying to give credit to Rachel, but really, if we're going to be giving, and I'm sure nobody wants credit for this move. This is not like a congratulations, you did a good thing. This is like, you were the first one to do something extremely shitty. So Rachel Levis had, if you remember from Scandoval, had claimed that she was possibly on the spectrum or neurodivergent or whatever because, and you know, has trouble with like empathy and all this other stuff and was kind of trying to use that as an excuse for why, you know, she had sex with her friend's boyfriend. So this is not the first time we've seen this move. Now, I don't know what Tamra was thinking. I don't know why she thought this did not work out for Rachel. Now, however, the backlash to Rachel claiming it was not the same as this. So Rachel was, I can't believe I'm about to say this. Rachel was smarter in how she presented it because she didn't like give us, you know, a like, oh, I went to one therapy session. You know what I mean? Also, Rachel does display some possible symptoms of it, where Tamra really doesn't, like, just based on, and again, none of us can know, you know, just by watching a show. You don't see the person enough. You don't have enough, you know, footage of them. We're not with them 24 hours a day, and none of us are medical professionals. Well, some of us are. There's definitely some, you know, psychologists and psychiatrists and speech language pathologists and people watching who may have a child or a family member who's on the spectrum. Yes. However, like if we're just going based on like the footage you see, Rachel does seem to display more, you know, symptoms of possibly having it. But that being said, I still didn't buy that. I still thought she was using that as an excuse, which it was, right? Even if she really had it, she could still have it and use it as an excuse. Like both of those things can be true. The thing with Tamra is, so Rachel did get some support. Like I remember people being like, oh yeah, I've always thought that about her. You know, the way that she acts on the show. I've thought that since, you know, her first season. Like I still see people commenting that now, but nobody really accepted it as an excuse for her actions. And people certainly called her out on like, no, you don't claim that you are on the autism spectrum as an excuse for bad behavior. That's insulting to the community. So same thing with Tamra here. And Tamra's is even worse because she's claiming that she's diagnosed after one therapy session, which like anyone with half a brain knows is not possible. You like it takes people, and I've had so many messages from, you know, my Patreon subscribers who have experiences with this, like whether it's like their own child or family member, people in my DMs, you know, telling me it took 7 or 8 months for their child to get diagnosed. Like it's, you know, it's just, I don't know what she was thinking. Like this is not, most people know someone or have a family member who's on the spectrum. Like a lot of people, they either have personal experience with it, like a family member or et cetera, or a child, or they know a friend whose child has it, or, you know, they know someone or they have some sort of experience, even if it's not like a super firsthand. Granted, there are a lot of people who don't. I'm not saying there's like every single person, but I think a lot of us nowadays have some general knowledge of it. Especially if you've had kids in school. And then there's, you know, a lot of people in the Bravo fan base are professionals in this area as well. So it's shocking to me that Tamra thought she could get away with this without getting called out. It's also shocking to me that she, like, it never seeks to amaze me how she thinks she can be smarter than the audience. But I guess that's her own stupidity. Like, maybe she's so involved in her own ego that, or I don't know if she's just not a critical thinker or what it is, but this was just such a blunder. I can't. And it's very offensive and insulting to anybody who has autism or anyone who has family members who have it. Right. So this was just so stupid. So I don't know what the hell Tamara's doing. Just when I thought Tamara could not make things any worse for herself, she did. So I'll give her that. She has certainly secured herself as the worst. Okay. I think people would take Alexis over her now back on the show if we're going to go that far. So obviously after announcing this on her podcast, the backlash was swift and aggressive, as, you know, is completely justified. So Tamara pulled back. Okay. She pulled back pretty quickly. Let me just find what she said. She posted this on her Instagram story on Create Mode, of course. Even though I check almost all the boxes, it's an ongoing evaluation and I will continue to figure out more through therapy. Thanks for all your DMs. Not sure I'm ready for this ride. Okay, so we're already backtracking. You know, this was within a very short period of time after this was making its rounds on social media. And so there was that. And then she started to backtrack even more. So just the fact that she went from I'm on the spectrum. That was what she said on the podcast. I'm on the spectrum. And then you have Teddy's flashes over to Teddy's face being So she didn't say I'm getting evaluated. That's not what you said. Okay. Now you're saying that now that you're getting the backlash. Right. So now all of a sudden it's an ongoing evaluation. I check most of the boxes. Now she's trying to walk it back. So then after much more backlash that went on all day, she posted this 7 or 8 paragraph statement saying, I started therapy because this year has been really hard on me. I started feeling really insecure. I was having intrusive thoughts and I didn't want to leave my house unless I had to. I even considered just being admitted into a mental health facility. Okay, so she's doing the Tom Sandoval now, or the Jax Taylor, in my opinion. It's okay, the autism thing backfired, extraordinarily. So now let me imply that I'm possibly thinking of self-harm or so. That's what I get from that. She didn't say that directly, but there's an implication. I started having intrusive thoughts, being admitted to a mental health facility. Okay. I don't know. That's just, I can't trust anything Tamara says. So in my conversations with my therapist, who I've known for years, we talked a lot about over the course of 2 hours. And she told me that many of the things about me, like how I process information, my sensory issues, my social anxiety, my aversion to eye contact with new people, my not wanting to be out of my routine, etc., were all signs of being on the spectrum. Now, on the spectrum is such a broad term. I don't really understand it fully. Okay, so maybe then you shouldn't speak on it. How about that? And my therapist told me more evaluation was needed. But when I sat down at the mic to record my podcast 15 minutes later and my head was spinning from what she had said, I had no time to process things or even talk to my family. Well, I mean, that's your own fault. You did have time. You didn't have to bring that up on the podcast. You chose to bring it up. She accuses Shannon of playing victim all the time, but nothing is more playing victim than, you know, trying to say you're a victim of your own actions. You chose to bring it up. You are trying to say that you are on the spectrum for sympathy, and now you're trying to go with the mental health facility and intrusive thoughts things. You are the one who plays victim. No, you don't cry and break down and storm out as much as Shannon, so it's not as clear to see. But Tamara is the one that plays victim, if you really break it down. So then she says, I was emotional. I just blurted it out. She did not just blurt it out. Go watch the clip. It was not a blurt out. Afterwards, my instinct was to have it removed, but I'm used to being so open with everything. And then she starts talking about how the processing this with the onslaught of negative comments has been horrible. So it's our fault, guys. If you know me, you know I don't like to look weak or play victim, although that's exactly what you just did. I hate labels, etc. Okay, where else? And then she starts talking about how she doesn't like to play victim, but she has past trauma that is deep and painful, that she suppressed for 15 years. She's finally getting the help she needs and she's proud. She thinks the best thing is to move forward more privately until she gets into a better mental space. Okay, yes, I'm admitting I'm weak and I'm okay with that right now. So I skipped a few parts just to give you kind of the, you know, the abridged version of what you really need. So not playing victim, but here's all the reasons of why I'm a victim. That's Tamra Judge. Okay. So listen, I can't. I'm glad that's over. And I'm glad that everyone called her on it, because there was a time where I feel like people would have been pretty sympathetic. Or if you like play certain cards with PR moves, like I even felt this way during Scandoval with Rachel, that she could play certain PR, you know, cards and people were falling for it. But I don't know if it's because Tamra's older and Tamra doesn't have as much like Tamra doesn't seem. I don't know how else to say it. Tamra doesn't seem as dumb as Rachel. And as like naive as Rachel, kind of Rachel had like a naive vibe. So maybe that's why Tamra's not getting away with it as much. Or maybe we all learned from Scandoval that not to like, you know, when people show you who they are, believe them, which I think some of us learned, but there's still people who didn't learn that and are, you know, believing Jack. So I don't know. So meanwhile, Eddie Judge says that he will always support the real Tamra, not the TV Tamra, blames editing for her portrayal this season. So he made a couple comments in replies on Instagram comments saying somebody commented on his post saying, I'm glad no matter what, you will always think your wife is right. And then Eddie said, it's not that difficult. The TV is not the same Tamra I married and love. I'll support her always because I know the real Tamra. The message is for everyone who currently have these toxic people in their life. Winky face. And then someone said, is divorce in the books? I'm sorry if it is. Marriage is hard and being on TV makes it that much harder. You're a great guy with a big heart, wishing you well. And he says, never. I love my wife to Mars and back. Well, the real Tamra, not the TV show Tamra that has been adversely edited. Here's the thing, though. So you're admitting, basically, that Tamra is not being her authentic self on TV. She's playing a character or putting on a persona or whatever. So how are we supposed to believe then when she comes on her podcast and starts saying that she's on the spectrum? Is that a storyline for the show? Is that the real Tamra or is that the pretend Tamra? Like, you know, Eddie's comments, you're not helping her because now you've just got everybody confirmed or you've confirmed to everyone that no one knows the real Tamra and that she is just a manipulative liar and that she will throw her friends under the bus and torture them on a show for the sake of ratings. Like that's, I don't know if Eddie thinks he's doing something, but he's not doing it. Okay. That's all I'm going to say. All right. So what else do we have about Tamra? Cause there's always so much. Okay. So Gretchen also weighed in. Says this is just Tamra's way of trying to gain sympathy from the audience that hates her. She's setting up her next year storyline with this BS. She's using this as an excuse for all her horrible behavior over the years and does this while crying crocodile tears. So let's get this straight. She has no empathy for others, but all of a sudden can have empathy for herself in that moment. What a gross and failed attempt to try and excuse her behavior and try and get the audience to feel sorry for her. She makes my stomach turn. If this is all true, then she will be on an apology tour to all the people she has hurt over the years. Until I see that, I don't believe this crap. I mean, listen, I can't stand Gretchen for other reasons, but agreed. This is definitely for a storyline. And then Gretchen also responded to a post on All About the Real Housewives podcast where they said their headline was that Eddie is blaming editing for Tamra's portrayal. And Gretchen said, oh my God, these two can't keep their story straight. So let's get this straight. She claims she is the truth teller and the most honest cast member, but now her own husband says the TV Tamra is not the real Tamra. Yeah, that is a good point. I hate giving any flowers to, you know, Rachel or Tamra or any of those people, including Gretchen, because she has her own ways of being terrible. But she is right about that, I do have to say. Okay, and that is definitely not all the OC news, because if you watch this week's episode or Thursday's episode, last week's, I should say, spoilers ahead, if you haven't, on the episode. Oh, no, 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 because that was the week before. So I think we're good. But basically, Shannon pulls out a text from 2018 that she found in her phone that confirms that Alexis was involved in the original lawsuit against Tamara and Shannon. So this was like back in 2018, right? So in the text, you know, it says Alexis texting her being like, we are going to take legal action and we are sick of your lies in the media or whatever. So implying that, you know, it's her and her ex-husband Jim Bellino doing this, which was a pretty big smoking gun. So Alexis went on social media with the airing of this and posted a kissy face selfie where she's like kind of looking over her own shoulder, like making a kissy face. I guess this is, I don't know, the picture she thinks goes with this caption. And then the caption is in all caps, I am not a liar. Okay. Then the rest is not in caps, but says, yes, I remember this text. A text is not a legal document, which was the original accusation. Alexis, nobody is saying that it is. No one is saying it is a legal document. What Shannon was saying from the start is that you were involved in encouraging the lawsuit or involved in it directly, and that your name was on some of the papers, which it was. Okay. Okay. The text did not get the ball rolling. It was my attempt to stop the ball from rolling. It was sent to both Tamara and Shannon at Jim Bellino's request with hopes that they would stop attacking our family. And at a time, our family was already in shambles from 6 months of our new divorce. Our kids were broken. I never supported Jim suing them. And once he began moving forward with the lawsuit, I told him I will never condone nor support it. I was never a part of this lawsuit. I am not a liar. Be sure to tune into the reunion as further evidence that I'm not a liar is revealed. Okay. Listen, here's the thing, though. At the end of the day, what Shannon is saying is that you may have not actually filed the lawsuit, like Jim is the one who filed it, but she somehow had the impression, and it felt like Tamara did at the time, but now Tamara's obviously flipped, but she somehow had the impression that you were like encouraging it. And to me, this post kind of proves Shannon even more right, because now you're saying that your kids were going through a difficult time and your kids were going through hell, and that Shannon and Tamara were making it worse with all their comments, etc. So it's sort of like, okay, that kind of gives it even, like, because before I was sort of like, why would Alexis be a part of the lawsuit when her and Jim were divorced and they were like 6 months divorced? But now this kind of shows a reason, right? So at the time, our family was already in shambles. Yeah, Jim Bellino's request with hopes that they would stop attacking our family. So that to me kind of says that, yeah, like we were divorced, but we were still in agreement that them attacking our family was wrong or whatever, right? So that's why I'm kind of like, this is why you need to talk less. Okay, a lesson to Tamara and a lesson to Alexis. Alexis should not have posted this. If you've got receipts that you say show you're not a liar and you bring them to the reunion or whatever, let's just go with that. Okay. Because this post to me actually makes it worse for you. Like you are kind of proving Shannon right. And I'm sorry, but like at the end of the day, she can say that her intentions were this, her intentions were that. We don't know. All we have is like, we don't know what's the truth from Alexis, because she has kind of come in with ulterior motives. And the only thing we can go with as facts is that text and the fact that Jim did actually sue them. So, yeah. All right. Now, we do have a couple other small kind of OC stories. The first one was, this was floating around online and it was pretty funny because people were making a lot of memes and stuff. But there was rumors floating around that Alexis Bellino's ex-husband, Jim Bellino, is now dating Elizabeth Lynn Vargas. So there was a picture of the two of them seemingly at dinner. He's got his arm around her. They look kind of happy. And, you know, everybody was freaking out about this. Elizabeth Vargas was on like one season of OC, the COVID season. It was a terrible season. But I will say that she's a character. Like, I kind of enjoyed her. Like, I wouldn't mind it if she was back. I don't think she's ever going to be back full time. I could see her as like a friend, maybe. But then I saw reported somewhere, it was either Elizabeth or Jim, I can't remember which one, who confirmed that they are not, in fact, dating and are just friends. I mean, who knows, though? But like, are there only like five people in OC, like five men to date in OC? Like Slade, Jim, John Jansen. Like, it seems like there's a very small pool. Is that why these women are willing to put up with like the most toxic, worst men ever? Like, do they just not have any other choices? I don't understand. Okay, so Jen Pedranti has opened a case with Child Support Services to receive alimony and child support from her ex. So basically what Jen says in this is that she had to open the case because she's not receiving anything from her ex-husband and she should be. Okay, so she was originally awarded that $6,000 a month, but she's not getting anything. So you go, Jen, you get it. Okay. She's taking care of those kids. I mean, like, that's crazy. I understand that, you know, she has some fault in the ending of their relationship, of course, but this isn't about that. Like, you've got to pay for your kids. Like, I can't. Okay. So let's go to, what are we going to go to? We have some news from old school New Jersey. And I don't want to bury this at the end because I think it's an important update. So if if you're an original New Jersey fan, which I think a lot of us are, you know Dina Manzo. And Dina Manzo is sisters with Caroline Manzo, of course. And the two of them married brothers, as is my understanding, okay? Which is how they both ended up with the last name Manzo. And so Dina married Tony. And Caroline married, Albert. Okay, Albert Manzo. So Caroline's married to him. So they're married to these two brothers. And Dina is in this marriage with Tommy Manzo, and eventually they get divorced. Okay. Then Dina starts dating this other guy. What's his name? I had it here. David Cantin, in, I think it was, I don't know, like 20... Between 2012 and 2015, okay, so then Tommy, Dina's ex, is charged with hiring a hitman who has mob ties to attack her husband, David Canteen, in 2015, because I guess they've gotten married. And then in 2021, he was also linked to planning a 2017 home invasion robbery on both Dina and David. So basically in 2017, Tony Manzo planned this like home invasion where these guys came in and terrorized Dina and her new husband, David, and beat them up. And this was like a bad attack. Okay. This was a traumatizing thing for Dina and her husband. Of course, who wouldn't it be traumatizing for? So basically, according to the release issued at that time, The alleged Lucchese crime family soldier pled guilty to planning and carrying out an aggravated assault on Canteen in 2015. So, yeah, so I guess like the guy that was hired by Tony Manzo was allegedly tied to the Lucchese crime family and he pled guilty to like planning this and carrying it out. Okay, so basically prosecutors say that Tommy Manzo hired him to assault Dina's new husband, who was her boyfriend at the time, in exchange for a deeply discounted wedding reception to be held at Manzo's upscale Passaic County venue. That is fucked up. That is all kinds of fucked up. Seriously, it's like he's not even paying. He's just giving them a discount. Like, that is fucked up. Okay. Oh, okay. So anyways, the other thing is that Thomas was upset that, you know, Canton had an ongoing relationship with his ex-wife, Dina. So this is like a classic abuser, right? Like, he's like, we're getting divorced. I can't have you, but nobody else can have you. And anyone who tries to have you, I'm going to have them beat up or killed, right? Like, that's basically what this is. Like, this is like a psycho ex. So apparently he planned to have a violent assault committed on Canteen that would leave a permanent facial scar. Wow. Okay. So they followed Dina's boyfriend to a strip mall in New Jersey, where they attacked him in a parking lot. Okay. They used a dangerous weapon, namely a slapjack, with the intent to inflict serious permanent injury, which is crazy. Okay. So the soldier guy, during his plea of guilty, he never mentioned that he was involved in this actively, directly or indirectly with Mr. Manzo. And basically, you know, Tommy's lawyer kind of used that as evidence to exonerate Tommy Manzo, like, oh, well, you know, the soldier guy didn't say that Tommy was involved. But then in 2017, we had the attack on Dina and David. Okay. So this was just a month before they were meant to get married. Okay. There was a brutal home invasion and they attacked her and her husband. The husband was badly beaten and they were tied up in their New Jersey townhouse. Their personal belongings, including Dina's $60,000 engagement ring, were stolen. Wow. Okay. So after this, they permanently moved to the West Coast. I mean, God, can you blame them? But like, how fucked up is it that they would even have to do that? Okay. Then I guess, you know, arrests were made in 2019 and Dina and David issued a statement saying, "We are so grateful to the New Jersey law enforcement authorities whose diligent investigation over the last 2 years culminated in today's arrest. Thank you to everyone who has expressed concern for our well-being. We have such a great support system." Okay, so now it's 2024, obviously, and Tommy Manzo has been convicted. Okay, so her ex-husband has been sentenced to 7 years in prison for violent crime in aid of racketeering and obstruction of justice, which to me, that's a very light sentence, considering that this, like, I understand they can only take one crime into account at a time. It's just so frustrating because you know he was involved in that initial one on Dina's husband in the parking garage. Like, you know he was part of that. And then to have a repeat offense, like a couple years later or whatever it was. And this is not just like they went into the home, tied them up, beat them up. Like Dina has talked about how, you know, she has PTSD. That's part of why they moved to the West Coast. Like she's done a lot of healing. And this is the other thing that has made people really turn on Caroline Manzo, because she wrote a letter, basically like a character reference type of letter for Tommy Manzo. So the man who went to like beat up and assault her sister and her sister's husband, because you know, Caroline is deep into that. Like I've always thought, and there's been a lot of talk about the Manzos being, you know, involved in organized crime and things like that. And Caroline's married to Albert and she's never going to divorce him. And yeah, she turned on her own sister. She turned on her own sister to stay true to this like crime family and to stay true to, you know, her brother-in-law, which is all kinds of fucked up. Like, honestly, and I'm sure she's justified it and made excuses and whatever to herself and to others. And I'm sure her husband, you know, had a hand in forcing her to do this. But yeah. She did that. So like a lot of people have hated her for that, justifiably, including myself. I was never a Caroline Manzo fan, to be honest. So Dina has made comments on social media, like just being like, yeah, it's pretty fucked up. Like replied to people who've been like, wow, your sister's disgusting for writing that letter. And, you know, Dina's like liked them or whatever. So Dina has spoken out about the sentencing. So this is what she says. "So many layers. So much emotions. I'm leaning into all of it. Eventually, I will speak on it. Every bit of it." Ooh, okay. We like that. "I will speak on it. Every bit of it. As I know, we as humans ultimately are here to serve and assist others with their pain and suffering. Lots and lots of forgiveness of self and others right now. Lots of exploration and self-reflection. Lots of self-control to not send the text or make the call." Okay, what's the text or the call? Is that to Caroline? Is that what she's talking about? What do we think, guys? I feel like she's talking about Caroline. like the call, like who's the call with. Now, this has been another reason why Dina and Teresa have had some issues has been because Teresa has remained friends with Dolores, and Dolores, who's very close with the Manzos, also wrote a character letter for Tommy Manzo. So I think Teresa in some ways was kind of maybe stuck in the middle because her and Dolores are co-workers and also friends and have known each other for a long time. And Teresa's not in directly involved in this, but, you know, it was like she couldn't really cut off her friendship with Dolores, but she still was friends with Dina. And I think that that was why Dina couldn't stomach coming to the wedding. I just think that like a lot of people tried to make it about, you know, Teresa and Dina. I think, you know, Dina was like, listen, we're friends. I like you. But at the end of the day, you're always going to have this connection to Dolores because of Real Housewives of New Jersey, which fine, you have a separate friendship with her. It's separate from all of this, but I can't be around that, like for my own mental health. Because anytime anyone's asked Dina about things, like since Teresa and Louis's wedding, Dina's also said, like, I have love for her. I respect her. We will always have a friendship. So to me, it sounds like I don't think it's as salacious as people have made it out to be. I think they have a mutual understanding. Like, Teresa gets why Dina can't be around her. And I think, you know, Dina gets why Teresa can't cut ties off with Dolores. Like, I think she understands that. So I do think that that is why Dina couldn't be at the wedding, because she would have to come back to New Jersey, be around all those people. Like, I just think that would be very difficult for her. And I totally understand why. I totally get that. Okay. Okay. So let's go to our next story. Ugh, old school New Jersey was so good. Okay. Let's talk about Vanderpump Rules, because Katie Maloney announced on her podcast that disrespectfully podcast that she has a new boyfriend and she's in love. And it didn't take long for the internet to figure out who it was. So the new boyfriend is, so she is dating Sleeping with Sirens musician Nick Martin. Now, this is where you know I'm old. I have no idea who Sleeping with Sirens is. I've never heard of Nick Martin. You know, he looks like kind of like a punky rock guy. I don't know. I've literally never heard of this band in my life. But her wonderful new boyfriend, that's because that's what she called him, is Nick Martin. Page Six confirms. Okay, so apparently they met through mutual friends in the music industry and bonded over their respective endeavors in hospitality. I don't know what his endeavor is, but okay. He runs a coffee company called Charlie Royal. Okay, there you go. Now, there's been a lot of people already like digging up stuff on him. He had his ex, I can't remember if it was his ex-wife or girlfriend, who came out and talked about how he's, you know, a pathological liar, how during their relationship, he cheated on her nonstop, lied nonstop. She basically also said that every time they would talk about, like, anytime he would bring up, like, other women, like his exes, other women that he knew, his bandmates or friends, girlfriends or wives, like, he would talk about them, like, super disrespectfully and, you know, what's it called? Like, just put them down and talk about how all women are crazy. And like, he was like that type of guy, basically. So she made a post that was like, this was like 3 or 4, you know, what's it called? Like create mode or whatever it was talking about him. So a lot of people, and there was also a Reddit post with somebody who had dated him speaking out about basically him being, you know, a piece of shit. So it's not a good start for Katie. I'm sure she was kind of nervous or partly excited to announce this, but it's already going awry, as Vanderpump relationships always do, don't they? Listen, I mean, I want Katie to find a nice guy. I love Katie. I'm a big fan of Katie. I hope she finds a good guy. I hope this guy doesn't break her heart. I hope that, you know, he's not as bad as all this says, but it doesn't sound good. But what I'm not going to do is be blaming Katie, because I think a lot of times we get like a girl will start dating a guy, who might have red flags and things like that. And people just fully go in on the woman as though she's the villain almost, or she's such an idiot for choosing him and da da da. It's like, some people just have to figure things out on their own. Some people just have to, like, you can be told these things and the other person on the other end who you've had intimacy with, who you've slept with, who you've shared these like really private moments with, and like they can convince you that they've changed or they were an immature idiot in the past or whatever. Like, he's like 41 now, like I've grown up. Like, they can convince you of all that stuff. So I'm here to just support Katie for now. I'm keeping my eye on this guy. And I hope that if he is a POS, which it seems like he probably is, that he shows his card soon so she can get out of it. That's all I can say. Okay. What is our next story? Let's talk about the Real Housewives of Potomac. Because, oh yeah, wait, we have one more Vanderpump Rules story, which is that Rachel is walking away from her podcast and moving on from having one foot in the door of Vanderpump Rules to focus on her new values and healing journey. Wasn't she doing that like 5 years ago? Like, there was one of the reunions, the one where she broke up with James, where she was moving on from Vanderpump Rules. Then she didn't come back to Vanderpump Rules last season because she needed to go on her healing journey and move away from the show. And then she spent the last year and a half or 2 years again talking about Vanderpump Rules nonstop on this podcast. And now again, she's moving away. So I'll believe it when I see it. She was never, this is why, like, you can't believe anything that these people say. Her, Tamra, these manipulative, lying people. She has said a million times that she's moving on from Vanderpump Rules. She's going on a healing journey. She's getting therapy. She has not changed at all. She's done nothing but talk about this show since Scandoval happened and tried to profit off of it. She was salty because she knew she made a mistake not signing on to the new season. And that's it. And now she's run out of topics and people have stopped listening. And the only reason anybody ever listened was to like grab a sound clip to, you know, put on their Bravo account and float around on Instagram or social media. And no one gives a shit. Everyone's over it. No one cares. Like, she'll be forgotten like a lot of other reality stars are in the next 10 years. Okay. So Rachel is not doing her podcast anymore. And we all thank her for it. I don't know who is really listening to that. Okay. Meanwhile, on Potomac, Mia is speaking up about Gordon. So first she put up a post that said, question for the people. Should a wife who worked during her entire marriage be responsible for paying her soon to be ex-husband alimony because he's 30 plus years older than her and says he can't find a job? Okay. Here's the thing, Mia. It doesn't matter whether he should, you know, maybe ethically, or it doesn't matter what people's opinions might be on this, right or wrong. It's what is legally true. If you make more money and you get divorced and he can't work or whatever the case is, you might just have to pay him. Sorry. It sucks. I can agree with her on that, especially if all the stuff she says about him being abusive, et cetera, over the years is true. But, you know, at the end of the day, people get divorced all the time and they have to pay alimony, you know, whether they like it or not. I don't know what Mia's thinking here, but like, maybe she just doesn't understand. It's not about like the morality of it or whether you agree with it or not. Like, legally, he may be entitled to some sort of support. Okay, so then she posted this long ass Instagram post where it's like a picture of herself with writing on top, where basically she says she's tired of protecting Gordon. Okay, she talks about how they met at the men's club Charlotte when she was only 19 years old. He would come into the club during certain seasons and spend endless amounts of money. Naturally, I was fresh bait. Being the young and impressionable adolescent adult, he masterminded and manipulated me into thinking he was a successful, powerful pillar in the community. Maybe he Maybe he once was, but his bones were buried deep. He won me in by showing interest in a charity organization that I was affiliated with and connected me with prominent people in the city, completely grazing over one of our four conversations at one of our first conversations with his very vague request. Sorry, she wrote it on the tiniest little font, so I'm struggling. I'm looking for a woman who will make me a kept man. He would teach me what he knew in business, but needed me to be his worker bee. Okay, so you kind of knew you'd be working and maybe paying alimony one day. I'm just saying. When I tried to distance myself, he started showing up at my home unannounced and told me if I didn't follow his guidance, then I would never amount to anything. This is exactly how the first couple of years went. Trapped, confused, yet still found my way through it all. My 24-year-old self is now sitting at the head seat at the executive table, running a multi-million dollar business, providing for my children, driving custom cars, traveling the world, what many would call the dream life. What my soon-to-be ex-husband failed to share was that the excessive spending and lavish gifts were soon going to end, as he didn't know when to stop spending and he didn't know how to stop buying women. After walking in on him having sex and making out with a friend of mine in our home, I soon decided that this was not what I wanted nor deserved. So I followed my heart and ran back to my love, Inc. Inc. has been and always will be my safe place. My soon-to-be ex-husband lost his mind, became abusive, and threatened my existence, not knowing or understanding what he was going through. He shared that he was bankrupt and needed my help, begged me not to leave him and for us to make it work. With less than gas money in his bank account, I decided to remain in my marriage and help him get back on his feet. Little did I know this would be the first of many rebuilding episodes that I would have to climb our family out of financial distress. Over the years, lots in between, I've endured many levels of abuse from my soon-to-be ex-husband. He promised that if I ever tried to leave him, he assured me I would not live a prosperous life, that he made me and that I will not be able to be successful without him. It took me over a decade to gain the confidence and independence to live life on my own terms. Then she says she's tired of protecting a predator who pays for sexual favors, who preys on young women and master manipulates them into being sex slaves. Okay. Listen, I am not denying on any level that Gordon is not a monster. I've always thought he probably was. He seems like he's the type who, you know, buys women and throws his money around. You know, some of that could be because of the bipolar. Like, he goes into these manic phases and like spends tons of money and buys, like, that actually would fit. And I fully believe that he was abusive to Mia, whether it was like psychologically or, you know, trying to like trap her or control her. I think all of that is true. Like, and it does seem like he was an older man who was kind of like making all these promises to this young, naive girl who, you know, we know Mia had like a very rough upbringing, you know, just came from a really rough place and didn't have like the security and the family to fall back on. Now, some of the things I think she's a little bit maybe glossing over could be sort of like I do think that she knew that part of the marriage was him, you know, being with her friends or having other women, and her, you know, even being with Inc., like, because it seemed like he knew about that the whole time and was kind of like allowed it. Like, it does seem like they had these weird sexual, I was going to say boundaries, but I guess non-boundaries, but it seemed like they did have a somewhat like, we're married, but we also, you know, explore things sexually. You know, Mia's friends would sleep with him. Like, she kind of made comments about stuff like that and her being okay with it. So it's hard to know with Mia. Like, it's just hard to know, like, was that you covering before and just trying to make yourself sound like you were okay with it and you were down with it, but really you're not? Or are you now using those things to add it to the reasons why Gordon is a monster? Which I don't think she really needs those, because I think there's probably enough other stuff about him that, you know, she can use to build her case. But to me, this seems like a reaction mainly to having to pay alimony, which she's pissed about. I really think she's pissed about. And I think she just doesn't want anyone to be on his side, which, I mean, understandably, he probably feels the same way. Anyways, the point is, these two are messy as fuck, and I can barely keep up with them, honestly. So in Beverly Hills News, Mauricio Umansky apparently filmed quite a bit for the new season with Kyle Richards, thus confirming to me that this marriage is a business arrangement and has been for a while. I'm not saying forever, but I think it's been for a while. And I do think that, you know, a lot of the like push and pull and the way that they kind of shared but didn't share their divorce was very much planned out and very much, you know, a PR move to try and get ratings for, you know, to try and hook people on to figure out what would happen when it came to Beverly Hills and Mauricio's show. What's it called? Buying Beverly Hills or whatever the hell it was called. I don't remember. It's already been canceled, by the way. So I guess we will see. Now, yes, him filming more, okay, does that mean we're going to get more about how their marriage and divorces, or are we going to just get more bland, you know, inauthentic scenes like we have in the past? I'm leaning towards the inauthentic because I just can't trust anything with these two, okay? Okay, I think that might be all for today. Wait, let's just double check. Oh, yes, one last thing. This is a kind of general Bravo news, but apparently Jeff Lewis announces his return to Bravo. His contract has been signed for his show to come back called Flipping Out 2.0. So if you are interested, there you go. Another Bravo show. I never watched the original Flipping Out. I get that Jeff Lewis is a controversial figure and that people are very like, you know, people, there's a lot of negative stuff out there about him, but it seems like people, you know, he still must have a fan base because he's got this like radio show that a lot of people listen to, you know, and he keeps his foot in the door when it comes to Bravo. So yeah, I guess he's clawed his way back on TV. So we shall see how that goes. I might check it out. I'm not going to lie. I'm not like a big Jeff Lewis fan. I don't really know much about him because I didn't watch that other show. But I know there's a lot of people who hate him and say he's terrible, but I wouldn't mind just, I don't know. I'm just, you know, I kind of like those house shows and yeah, I don't know. I just want to see. I'm curious. May watch an episode or two. Okay, everyone. I hope you all have a fantastic week. Thank you so much for joining me. It is always fantastic and fun to be here with all of you. And until next time, you are now in the know for everything Bravo. Bye.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Your support really means everything to me, and this show wouldn't be possible without you, the listeners. So please, if you enjoy the podcast, leave a 5-star rating and subscribe so you don't miss an episode. For more, you can join my Patreon, patreon.com/BravoandBotox, and for $5 a month, you'll get 4 extra podcast episodes a month. You'll also get early releases of Bravo Paper episodes and more. Please also subscribe to my YouTube channel at The Bravo Papers and follow me on Twitter, Instagram, at Bravo and Botox, and at The Bravo Papers. If you'd like to buy me a coffee, you can at buymeacoffee.com/BravoandBotox. You know, send your love through some much needed caffeine. And any guest that was on today's episode will be in the show notes, all their social media and contact information. So thank you so much, everyone. Keep overanalyzing Bravo.